total to Mary, right?
Right.
And so that's kind of what you saw happen. And I think all this is sort of obvious in the emails. And I think Sanders' partisans are deeply upset by that, you know, rightfully, that they kind of believed that while they thought there was bias, that they would get a fair shake. And I think that was never really going to be the case, unfortunately.
That kind of brings us to wrap up for the show today. I want to thank you so much. I know that it wasn't easy to get to get the phone call through, and we are lucky that we actually made it through the conversation without the phone lines cutting out. I'm absolutely convinced that had we been speaking about Palestine, that the phones would have cut out. I could say it now because we made it through the interview.
Possibly.
But anyway, I want to thank you so much. This has been the Dog and Pony Show in Philadelphia is being protested loudly and hotly and vigorously. The protests outside the convention center are far, far louder and more energetic than anything going on inside, at least on the surface. Undercover, however, the conspiracy theories that are boiling up and getting all ready to be set loose as actual truths, that we don't know, no idea. But we're going to call you and talk about it, hopefully, when those do emerge. Thanks again so much, Adam. My guest has been Adam Johnson, recently wrote with DNC, leaks former conspiracy theory. It's now true, no big deal. That's it for today. This has been Air Cascadia for Monday, July 25th, 2016. Engineering for us today is Natasha. I'm not going to try and say this. Debonair and Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOOAM News and Public Affairs Director. As always, I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, and take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned. Here comes Locus Focus.
This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
This KABU program has also been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Grindle's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KABU, Grindle's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th Avenue. Information is at 503-595-9550 or facebook.com/Grindle's Coffee House. Up next, Locus Focus is off today at 10:15. Kathleen Stevenson speaks with Sandy Polishuk and Mia Rebeck of 350 PDX about Portland's fossil fuel ban, which was passed in November, and how the city is approaching it now.
Good morning. This is Kathleen Stevenson for KABU Public Affairs. And with me are two guests, both from 350 PDX. Sandy Polishuk is Divest Team Coordinator, and Mia Rebeck is Staff Organizer. Thank you both for coming in today.
Great to be here.
We're going to be talking about two issues in this interview: the move to rescue Portland's fossil fuel ban, looking at new proposed code language by the City of Portland, and the upcoming hearing at Metro Council this week on divesting from fossil fuels. So let's start with the second of those. Sandy, can you tell us what's going on with Metro and the issue of divesting from fossil fuels?
Well, the whole point of divesting from fossil fuel, it's part of the larger campaign to keep it in the ground, that we cannot afford to burn 80% of the reserves that the oil, gas, and coal companies own that are still in the ground. So we need to keep them there. It's in their bottom line, so they'd really like to get it out and burn it, but that will put more carbon, five times more carbon, into the atmosphere than we can afford to have there if we're going to have any chance to keep a livable planet. So divest is one arm of that campaign to keep it in the ground. So the fossil fuel companies are, they are so rich. There's no way we're going to like get them by going to the courts. We have to do it. Our power is not with money. Our power is with people. So we just have to keep the grassroots demanding it. And this is one of the grassroots demands. Portland and Multnomah County already divested from fossil, made the commitment to divest from fossil fuel. It's going to be two more years, I believe, before Portland, all the bonds that they have in ExxonMobil mature, and they won't be renewing them because they made this commitment. And Multnomah County already has no investments, and they have their resolution in place, so they won't buy them. So Metro is the next one that completes everything that anybody in Multnomah County's governments has, and it also brings us into Clackamas and Washington County with Metro. And they too, like the county, do not have any of their own investments that they control in fossil fuel, and so this resolution will make sure that that stays that way. So we're really excited about it. Councilors Bob Stacey and Sam Chase have been the ones championing it for us. So give them each a little gold star and remember that. And so it's coming before the council. We've been working with them for, boy, a couple of years. The bureaucracies move at a snail's pace, but they move, and we're really pleased and excited about it. And they'll be having the hearing and the vote on Thursday afternoon. The meeting starts at 2. We're about the third or fourth thing on the agenda, but I think the things before us are fairly short. We want people to come. And we want to show that there is a lot of support for this. And we especially would love it if people from Clackamas and Washington County come and show that this is not just, you know, little red Portland out here. So if you can wear orange, that's great. If you can't, we're going to be having a little rally around 1:45 in there's a courtyard at Metro. Metro is at 600 Northeast Grand. It's right on the streetcar, and there's a lot of buses that run up and down Grand and MLK too, so it's easy to get to. And so we'll have a little rally, and we'll be handing out some orange little wavy things if you don't manage to wear orange, that you can wave when they're talking about it and voting and things like that. So we just love people to come. That's this Thursday, the 28th.
This Thursday, the 28th at 2 p.m. Is that when the hearing is?
The hearing will be called to order at 2 p.m. Our item won't come up right away, but you want to be there in time. If you want to testify, they'll be putting out the sheets about 1:45 for that. So if you want to talk, that's fine. Come sign up and then come outside and join us at our little mini rally, and then we'll all come in at 2:00. And you don't have to. Once the item is done, it's absolutely fine to leave. So you don't have to give your entire afternoon to this.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the two counselors that have been pushing it. Have they managed to get support from other councillors?
Oh, absolutely. They did not bring it until they knew that it was going to pass. We do know that there's one councillor that has not been convinced, and we expect him to vote no, which is, it's sad. The county and the city were both unanimous, but we're going to be happy with what we get.
Okay. Are you willing to say who that is?
No, I don't. I actually do not know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And what you mentioned that they don't already have investments in fossil fuels?
Well, they don't. The way most cities and counties and metro, which is unique, work is that they keep their short-term investments under their own control, most of them. I know Ashland doesn't. So when they divested, all they could do was say, you know, we want the state to divest. But they do have a lot of money in the invested at the state through the state treasurer and the Oregon Investment Council. And they have two funds that the Oregon Investment Council manages. One is the Oregon PERS, the Public Employees Retirement System. The other is something called the Local Government Investment Pool. And it's that pool where most of the cities and counties and metro put their long-term investments. And we are gathering PERS members to start organizing to demand that PERS be divested. And I'll give a quick little plug for that, any PERS members who are listening who would like to see their investments in line with their values. And I have to say the added thing, fossil fuel is becoming horribly dangerous, risky investment now, because as soon as the world really wakes up, and we saw them opening their eyes, I think, in Paris, but they haven't stood up yet and really demanded that these reserves be kept in the ground. But that is going to happen. They know it, the fossil fuel companies, and their share prices have fallen. They are not a really good investment anymore. But Ted Wheeler told me over a year ago that he thought anybody put money in coal was crazy, But it's becoming that way also for gas and oil, fracking. The world has woken up to fracking. I think that PERS members, your investment in your retirement would be well served both morally and financially. So if you would like to get involved, very easy, you go to our website, 350pdx.org, scroll down just a little ways, and you'll see a big orange button that says Divest PERS, or I think that's what it says, might be PERS Divest. But click that, it'll take you to a little sign-up sheet. You won't have to do anything, but it'll be a way, number one, for us to be able to say we have many, many PERS members behind us. And if you do want to be involved, it'll be a way for us to get in touch with you and tell you what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And so that's probably the next focus of the divest area?
We focus on a lot of things. We work with the colleges. We have a personal divestment so people can, find out how they can clean up their own investments. We work with foundations. McKinsey River Gathering has just voted to divest, and we're working with them now on the press release. And so we work on a lot of fronts, but PERS is our big new one.
And so, again, Sandy, just to repeat, the hearing that you're asking people to come to and support at Metro, the specifics of the time?
It's 2 p.m. this Thursday at Metro, which is 600 Northeast Grand. I believe the cross street is Irving. It's just north of the freeway there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's Sandy Polishek, who is the Divest Team Coordinator at 350PDX. And also with us, as I mentioned earlier, is Mia Reback, who is the staff organizer. And your issue today is the other one we want to discuss, and that's how the City of Portland is approaching the resolution that they approved in November to actively oppose the expansion of infrastructure. And maybe you can elaborate more on that, Mia, and tell us what was that, just for review, and then we'll go into what's happening with that now.
Yes, great. Thank you so much for having me on the show today. Last November, Portland passed a historic resolution that formally stated the city's opposition to expanding fossil fuel infrastructure. This came just a few weeks before the Paris climate talks, when the world rallied together to set strong climate goals and establish limits for warming that were deemed safe, 1.5 degrees Celsius, the notable number there. And why this resolution was so important is because the Pacific Northwest has seen, in particular, an onslaught of proposals for new fossil fuel terminals. We're talking massive, massive transport and storage terminals that were altogether estimated to be about five times that of the Keystone XL pipeline. And so the City of Portland, after deciding that Pembina Propane Terminal, a large propane export facility, was not fit to our standards, came forward and passed this resolution that was a sweeping opposition against all new fossil fuel infrastructure, coal, oil, and gas. And it was really bold, really historic. The resolution also acknowledged that we have existing fossil fuel terminals that are seismically unsafe, and that if there was a major earthquake like the one that is predicted, these storage tanks would fall into the Willamette River and essentially kill the river. And the resolution also acknowledged that we need a just transition for workers in communities most impacted by the fossil fuel industry. The final thing that made this resolution so profound is that it wasn't just a verbal declaration that we need to move away from fossil fuels. It also directed the City of Portland to follow up and use its existing laws to make it legally binding. And that's what is going on right now. So the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability has released a discussion draft around these zoning code changes that would actually change our city law to make it so we can't build these new terminals. But unfortunately, the current discussion falls short. The thousands of Portlanders that showed up to hearings, submitted comments, made phone calls, were really, really expecting a clean ban, straight opposition to any new development. But instead, this current discussion draft is actually just setting size limits on new fossil fuel terminals, but would still allow for major, major development. And so the example that I like to use is that it would allow for a new crude oil terminal of 500,000 barrels per day. And that would take about seven oil trains to fill. And these are the same disastrous crude oil trains that we just saw derail in Mosier, that is getting a lot of attention that our city council has repeatedly stated its opposition to. And so it's completely inconsistent with that policy, with the intent of the resolution, as well as with our carbon reduction goals, to allow for any volume of new terminal. Just like how fossil fuel terminals aren't, or fossil fuels aren't good investments for our financial portfolios, we also don't want to get stuck with new fossil fuel infrastructure because the world is waking up. We are moving away. There is strong action being taken at all levels of government, as well as from the grassroots in every corner of the world, to keep fossil fuels in the ground. And so we don't want to get stuck with a new terminal. And we know that any new fossil fuel development will be unsafe for the immediate health and safety of Portlanders, just because transporting and storing fossil fuels are inherently unsafe. And because when they're burned, they're causing catastrophic climate change. And so we're asking folks right now, there's a comment period going on. The City of Portland, specifically the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, are accepting comments on this discussion draft until this Wednesday, July 27th. If you go to our website, 350pdx.org. You can get lots of more information about the background of this project. You can read the original resolution, as well as directly send a comment into the City of Portland, letting them know that you, along with thousands of other Portlanders, want a full ban on new fossil fuel infrastructure.
Do you have any sense as to why they are drafting the language like this, even though the resolution passed?
The discussion draft itself is about a 30-page document that includes a long section on stakeholder feedback. So the City of Portland, in consulting with stakeholders, did meet with environmental groups, neighborhood groups, but they also met with the fossil fuel industry. And we have 10 existing fossil fuel terminals in Portland, and it was representatives from these companies, and we're talking about some of the biggest fossil fuel companies in the world, BP, Chevron. You know, of course, these companies are coming to the city and saying, you need fossil fuels. You need us. You have a demand for us. You need more of us for decades to come. Let us build more. Let us build more. And so we think it's that this discussion draft inherently has to incorporate stakeholder feedback, or that's part of what it is. And so that's the influence. But we know that the fossil fuel industry is not giving up. They're not going to regulate themselves to address the climate crisis. We have proof now, documented evidence, that the major fossil fuel companies have known concretely about climate change and that burning fossil fuels causes it since the 70s, and haven't taken action, and have actually actively derailed action to transition to renewable energy. And so we have 40 plus years of evidence that the fossil fuel industry is not capable of addressing this crisis or regulating itself, because it wasn't designed to. And so that's where the people come in, grassroots organizations, as well as local governments, need to come in and take a bold stance and draw the line and say, no, we are not going to keep building fossil fuels. We are going to transition to renewable energy. We have woken up. We're going to keep it in the ground.
What is the next step after this draft discussion? Tell me again.
So after the discussion draft, the next step is the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability will incorporate all the feedback they get and come out with a new proposed draft. And there'll then be a public hearing on that. The one is currently scheduled for September 13th. So save the date on that. And so it's really, really important that people send in comments, let the city know that we are expecting and want a full ban. Send your own reasons why you care, why climate change is impacting you, why you don't want dangerous bomb trains rolling through Portland. Let the city know it's really, really important. And that's how we're going to see a really, really strong next version of this draft come out.
Can you talk about Portland's stance on this and what Portland's done in the context of other cities in the area and beyond who are now interested in this?
Yeah, Portland has a reputation as a climate leader. We are one of the first cities to pass a climate action plan in the 90s, and have always been looked at as on the forefront of climate action, green building, urban planning. And so we have lots of cities around the world look to Portland and are looking to our leadership. And so it's really, really important that we get this policy right and do pass that full ban on all fossil fuel terminals, coal, oil, gas, as well as other fossil fuel related products like methanol. Really important, because cities are looking to us. We're already seeing other municipalities pass similar policies. Notably, Vancouver, Washington passed an ordinance a week ago last Monday banning oil terminals. Hoquiam, Washington has also passed one. And last month, the city of Oakland passed an ordinance against coal terminals. And so this is a trend, it's a shift we are starting to see, where local municipalities are taking steps for bold and binding climate policy in the absence of state and federal action.
Yeah, the word binding seems key. And are you going to be making that point to the council?
Yes. And, you know, that's, I think, one thing that many people don't know is that we have this fantastic climate action plan at the City of Portland. We have state carbon reduction goals, but these aren't binding, and they don't have mechanisms in place right now that ensure that we take the steps needed to address climate change and, you know, really contribute our carbon reductions, that everywhere, everyone around the world has to contribute to that, but especially the United States, where we have such a historical impact on climate change. And so it's really through policies like this that we can take a non-binding climate action plan and make it binding. That's something that we definitely need to push for more at the city and state level.
So again, what can people do? How do they do it with the comment period?
Yeah. Visit 350pdx.org, where you can get all the information about the city of Portland's fossil fuel zoning code changes to ban new fossil fuel terminals. They have a comment period that ends July 27th. That's this Wednesday, so we have 2 days left. We need to send in as many comments as possible to let the city of Portland know we want a full ban on fossil fuel terminals. And you can visit 350pdx.org to get more information and send in your comment today.
Okay, great. That's Mia Reback, and she's the staff organizer at 350PDX. And we have a couple minutes left in our interview. What do you think is important to say that we haven't gotten to, or that we need to emphasize with people?
Well, I got off the subject a little when I started talking about the local government investment pool. The whole reason I was going to say that, I got off on the PERS campaign, which I'm very excited about. But one of the things that's great about the Metro resolution is that the third resolve is that Metro is going to urge the Oregon Investment Council and the state treasurer to divest the local government investment pool. So that's very exciting. The PERS campaign is going to go after the PERS, which is, I don't know, $90 billion or something. So the local government investment pool is a little smaller, but it's still in the billions. So it would be a nice plum to get divested as well. So we really appreciate that part of their resolution.
Right. And what are there any other aspects when you're talking about the whole state of Oregon divesting?
Well, there have been Ashland, as I said, I had a resolution quite some time ago. Eugene has, Corvallis. It's going on around, you know, especially in the Valley. I think there's some movement in Bend that we're looking at spreading to surrounding counties and cities, the suburbs. But those are ongoing campaigns.
Right. So it's a combination of city by city and from the...
And we want the cities pressuring the Oregon Investment Council, because that is most of their money is in that pooled fund.
Mm-hmm. And Mia, do you have things that you would like to say as we wrap up this interview?
Just that there has never been a better or more pressing time for people to get involved in the climate movement. 350PDX, we're a volunteer-led nonprofit made up of about 10 different teams. Really excited for people to get involved. Join us. Everyone can be a climate activist, whatever your calling is, whether it's policy, protest, art, community building. There's a space for you in our organization. And if you visit 350pdx.org, you can get connected with volunteer opportunities and join us.
Okay. And the two deadlines this week, Wednesday is the deadline for the comment period, and Thursday is the hearing for Metro and the issues there. So I want to thank you both very much for coming in, talking about this timely issue.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And let people know again, I've been speaking with Mia Reback. She is the staff organizer at 350PDX, and Sandy Polishuk, who is the divest team coordinator there. Again, thank you both. And now we want to finish out this program today. As we go to the end of the hour, we are going to hear a recorded program from Project Censored, the Project Censored show. And this is a segment on whistleblowers.
Welcome back to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. In this segment of today's program, we're going to be focusing on whistleblowers and the Whistleblower Summit in Washington, D.C. We are joined by Marcel Reed. She is one of the longtime organizers of the Whistleblower Summit in Washington, D.C. And we're also joined today by Tom Devine. He is the legal director of the Government Accountability Project. GAP was founded in 1977. So we're going to be spending this segment of the show talking a lot about whistleblowers and updates on whistleblowers, and also what goes on at this annual Whistleblower Summit in Washington, D.C. that has interface not only with whistleblowers, but also members of Congress, U.S. government. And so let's start with you, Marcel Reed. First of all, Marcel Reed and Tom Devine, thanks for joining us on the Project Censored Show again.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Marcel Reed, let's start with you. And a lot of people may not know that there is such a thing as the Whistleblower Summit, despite that this has been going on for some years. Project Censored has supported this and been a co-supporter of this. Tell folks about this.
Absolutely. This is the largest annual gathering, the only annual gathering of whistleblowers and their advocates in the U.S., perhaps the world to my knowledge. And we bring together both whistleblowers and advocates, members of the press, and the general public. And it's the only mix of people like that that we're aware of. We also bring in people who develop policy as well as lawmakers. And it's a very effective network for whistleblowers to have contact with the public as well as lawmakers. And it's also a support system for whistleblowers so that they don't feel so alone, because blowing the whistle very often isolates you.
Well, Marcel Reed, can you tell us a little bit more specifically what is going to be going on here? What goes on at the summit itself? What kind of activities? Who are some of the folks? And what are some of the subjects this year?
Every year we have panelists, and we have panels on various things that are in the news right now. For instance, this year we're going to have panelists that are going to be talking about LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, which will be a group of law enforcement officers retired who are going to talk about how the law has affected so many people. We're going to have people from law enforcement that are going to say that they were whistleblowers, and when they tried to report many of the things we're seeing reported in the news now, how they lost their jobs or were threatened. Some of them were actually threatened with being harmed on their jobs, as well as a cadre of panelists that are going to talk about things that affect people in the federal government specifically. This year's partners will also be hosting some panels. I know that GAP is going to host two panels, and I'm sure Tom can talk about those in depth, but those panels are going to be about the Office of Special Counsel. And we're also going to have a panel on healthcare in America. It's going to talk about how so many people have blown the whistle on healthcare, as well as the impact of whistleblowing directly on people in the community. We're going to have an EEOC panel where we're going to have members of the EEOC speak to people in the federal government as well as private industry about how those laws are affecting them. So it's a great opportunity to learn information, to mingle with other whistleblowers, to directly question policymakers. And we round that out by having an evening book signing and filming and the airing of a film that usually focuses on whistleblowers. That will be followed on Thursday by a reception that's being hosted by GAP, POGO, and Public Citizen. And that's an opportunity for the general public, members of the whistleblowing community, and staffers in Washington, D.C. to get together and just to meet each other and to hear the concerns that whistleblowers and members of the advocacy community have. So it's well-rounded.
Yes, that is. Marcel Reed, you're a Pacifica Whistleblower Liaison. You're one of the organizers of the Whistleblower Summit in Washington, D.C. You can learn more at whistleblowersummit.com. And Tom Devine, Legal Director at Government Accountability Project, you're one of the sponsors and participants in the Whistleblower Summit. Talk to us a little bit about what GAP's doing at the summit.
We're leading two panels. One is about kind of the state of freedom of speech rights for whistleblowers, the successes and failures in the free speech campaigns we're working on. The other is a panel about the Federal Whistleblower Agency, the U.S. Office of Special Counsel, which is kind of the hub of the action for federal government whistleblowers. And that's going to include a couple of people who are really heroes to me on it. I like a lot of the special counsel officials, and I have some representatives, but I'm talking about the whistleblowers. One is a gentleman named Robert McClain. He's a federal air marshal who prevented a more ambitious rerun of 9/11 in 2003 when the air marshal service was about to go AWOL during the threat. It had been confirmed by U.S. counterintelligence after tips from Saudi intelligence that al-Qaeda was planning to have another strike, only this one would not just target the capital, but cities up and down the West Coast in the U.S., European capitals, London, Paris, Rome, the capital of Australia even, Canberra. And in the middle of this threat, the air marshals were going to cancel all of our coverage due to some bureaucratic scandals, kind of corruption going on there. And Mr. McClain warned the public that this was going to happen. He prevented the air marshals from going AWOL. He was fired for doing so. He fought his case all the way up to the Supreme Court and won last year with help from the U.S. Office of Special Counsel. The other whistleblower who will be on our panel, Mickey, is somebody else who's just really special. His name is Brandon Coleman. And Brandon ran the nation's most effective suicide prevention program for veterans at the Veterans Administration. It's saved so many lives there. But he lost a few because he was sort of an island of care in a sea of neglect. He would get people's hopes up and all charged up, and then they'd go and sit in an empty room for 6 hours, getting ignored and get desperate and walk out in the middle of traffic and kill themselves. So he blew the whistle on the lack of support surrounding his work. And the VA responded by canceling the whole suicide program and trying to fire him. And through the Office of Special Counsel, he not only got his job back, but the suicide program has been expanded, and they'll both be telling their stories.
Tom and Marcel, I'm looking at the schedule for the events, and this is happening in Washington, D.C. on the 27th, 29th of July. One of the days, it looks like Thursday, you're going to have a panel moderated by Andrew Krieg on the 28 pages, and that has been finally declassified as part of the 9/11 report, which identifies key Saudi personnel, government officials, and closely related, who were in support and helped provide money for and logistics for some of the alleged 9/11 hijackers. Do you see that as a major release, an important event?
It's one that's actually whistleblowers have been pushing for a long time. And at last year's summit, a gentleman named Bill Bergman spotlighting the need for that and more thorough investigations. Bill had been working at Federal Reserve Board when 9/11 happened, and he discovered that there had been a tremendous, striking, unprecedented withdrawal of funds by Saudis from U.S. banks right before 9/11. And he started asking some questions. What was going on here? And do we know the explanation? And he was immediately fired just for asking the questions. And we're hopeful that his long campaign to get the truth out will be reinforced by this development that we can thank former Senator Graham for.
Marcel Reed, there are several excellent panels, topics, discussions. One, Black and Blue, Black Lives Matter and Police Whistleblowers, among others. What can you tell us about that?
Thank you for asking. It was a recently added panel. We were going to have a panel that didn't confront this so directly. But the reason that we impaneled this is one of our whistleblower participants, Matthew Fogg, is a former U.S. Marshal, and he is very immersed in the law enforcement world, along with Mr. Grogan, who is also a former U.S. Marshal. They, for years, have talked about what has been going on in the law enforcement arena, the disparity in treatment, and the fact that when any of them spoke up, just asking the question very often will derail your career. This was an opportunity for them to now gather on Capitol Hill and talk about specifically what they have been seeing, and not just what they've been seeing and reporting out what's wrong, but hopefully to try to cobble together some cures for it, some way to fix this problem that's been ongoing. I mean, I remember distinctly hearing about this for the last 20 years. some version of this is always cropping up every 12 to 18 months. There weren't video cameras before, but the stories in many instances were absolutely true and absolutely ignored. We hope that this will be an opportunity for that. And one of our media panel participants, a woman named Diane Andrews, is currently in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where she has a program called In Black and White. She has interviewed everyone associated with the shooting in Baton Rouge. One of her associates was actually there when the officers were shot in Baton Rouge. They were actually there and had the policemen have them turn their car around once they realized what was happening. So that would be an opportunity for someone to report out who was actually at the scene of it and who saw what was happening, as well as knowing all of the members of the man's family who was shot. So we hope that this will be an opportunity for people to speak back and forth about this while there are policymakers in the room. Hopefully staffers from Capitol Hill will be there. So we'll be more than just demonstrating in the street. We will be in the room with people who can make some significant changes.
That's the voice of Marcel Reed. She is one of the organizers of the Whistleblower Summit in Washington, D.C. You can learn more at whistleblowersummit.com. We are also joined by legal director of the Government Accountability Project, GAP. You can learn more about them at whistleblower.org.
KBOO Radio and the Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group bring you the 2016 Willamette River Festival, Sunday, July 31st at Cathedral Park from noon till 7. Celebrate, dance, and reconnect with the wonderful Willamettes. Musical guests include Logger's Daughter and Zydeco Bands, Cascade Crescendo, and the New Iberians. Also, DJ Anjali and the Incredible Kid. That is July 31st at Cathedral Park. More information at www.willametteriverfestival.org.
This KBOO program, also made possible in part by a KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Nappy Farms, specializing in sustainable you pick blueberry practices. Nappy Farms You Pick Blueberries is located at 10280 Southeast Orient Drive in Boring, Oregon. For more information, the number is 503-663-0885 or online at nappyfarms.com. At 11, disability awareness is off today. We'll hear from caring relationships, negotiating meaning, and maintaining dignity, an exploration of the dynamics and dynamic and complex relationship of care, receiving, and giving from the series Making Contact. And at 11:30 on Voices for the Animals, Courtney Scott speaks with Darcy Dene, director-producer of The Champions, a film that follows the dogs rescued from Michael Vick's dogfighting ring. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. KBOO continues to exist because of you.
Making contact.
I'm Laura Flynn, and you're listening to Making Contact.
The minute I walked through the door, her name was Gladys. Her face would light up, and she'd be so happy. Come on, Camille, this is what we're doing today. We're going to do this, that, and the other. And we would map out our day. I clean the house, get everything done, get her bathed, lay out her clothes for the day. This is what you can wear, this. And I'd drive her to do whatever it was she needed to do.
Camille Christian is an in-home care provider. Bathing, feeding, dressing, cleaning are among a laundry list of daily living activities involved in long-term care work. It's labor-intensive. You're also seeing someone in their most intimate moments. Home care worker Brenda Jackson says her clients are like family.
As a matter of fact, I call her Aunt Mary. So she's part of my family now. So that's why it's important for me to make sure she's happy and she's comfortable and she's in her own home.
Christian says that it's also a matter of dignity.
Everybody needs to feel that they have their own self-respect.